Blog Talk Radio.
This is JJ Bomber. You are listening to Well Armed Radio.
Well, good evening, sheepdogs. Welcome to Well Armed Radio, where freedom is our best friend. Thank you for joining us in our, well, I can't say weekly, bi-weekly, once a monthly. Excuse me. Thank you for joining us in our sometimes bi-weekly, vigorous, relentless, and almost always ruthless pursuit of freedom. We are broadcasting live from the very well-armed studio in New Berlin, Wisconsin, and it's my pleasure to speak with the most informed gun owners in the state. That would be you guys. You are your community's finest. With a face for radio and a voice for silent movies, my name is Nick Clark. I'm the president of Wisconsin Carry and the host of Well-Armed Radio, and just a free man trying to stay afloat in a sea of communism here. But hopefully that won't be the case for too long. We've got hopefully a great day coming up on Tuesday. We'll talk about that a little bit on the show here. But I'll encourage you to be a part of the show if you're listening live as opposed to the podcast. The call-in number for live listeners is 563-999-3787, 888-999-3787. That's the call-in number for live listeners. And I'll start the show with my always usual warning. There are no sacred cows here. And so this week I did a good thing. I posted the link to the show, 4 days ago. So it was at Tuesday, Wednesday, just because I knew it was going to be time change. So I knew the sun was going to go down at 3 o'clock. I jest only by a short bit, but yeah, it's, I guess we're no longer in daylight savings. So we're in standard time, which translates to, it gets dark, right after lunch. You know, that a lot of people think that a daylight savings is going away. The Senate did pass a bill last year to eliminate daylight savings, but the House of Representatives has not taken it up. So I would love to see daylight savings made permanent. I want to use the right syntax there. What the bill actually would do is make daylight savings permanent. The bill would actually, during the summer, we're on daylight savings time. And the bill that passed the Senate last year would make daylight savings time permanent, meaning that we'd be on daylight savings time all year round. And so that would be great for, and it's crazy. I mean, you know, I was never into astronomy. My dad kind of was. My dad was more of a fan of the constellations and the stars and big into science fiction, Star Trek and all that good stuff. And he used to, he'd pick us up to come visit him for visitation, back in the day when, we didn't have internet and so long distance was expensive. So really only time I saw my dad was summer vacation for like a month or 6 weeks we'd be there. And then, or maybe it was 2 months, I can't remember. And then there would be, I think, Thanksgiving. We would usually go see him. Not positive. I think most Thanksgivings. And then Christmas. Spring break, I can't remember. I think some spring breaks we did. I'm not 100% sure. I think spring breaks we did. Anyway, he'd pick us up from Delavan. He used to live in Michigan when we were little. And then he moved to Central Illinois. And then he moved to Naperville, Illinois. But the times I remember most distinctly were when he lived in Michigan and Central Illinois. But he'd pick us up, and then when we were going down to Central Illinois, you'd get outside of town, you get away from the light pollution, they call it, and you can see there's just way more stars. Like my fiance and I, when we were up at Buckhorn State Park tramping a couple weeks ago, a month ago, just the amount of stars you can see without the light pollution is just phenomenal. It's truly beautiful. That's one of the things I remember when I was younger, and go up to Vilas County, to Boulder Junction, where my grandparents had a cottage. And you walk out of you get up there, you leave, usually Friday afternoon, you leave the, southeast Wisconsin area, several hours to get up there. By the time you get up there, it's dark. And just you walk out of the car and you look up at the sky and you just never seen so many stars in your life. It's just, it's awesome. And so I'm not too much into astronomy, but I marvel at how much daylight we lose. I mean, obviously has to do with the tilt of the earth and all this good stuff. But I mean, in the summer, okay, right now it's 8:12 and it's been dark for hours. In the summer, I'd still be golfing right now. I mean, I would be on the golf course and it would be light. I think our latest and it depends on what part of your time zone you're at, because when I go to Minneapolis, I'm getting to the further west in the central time zone, and the sun goes down later. When we traveled to Saugatuck on the yacht this summer, you're on the very western edge of the eastern time zone, and it was light. I mean, I think the sun went down at like 9:45, 10. I mean, it was still twilight at 10 o'clock. I mean, maybe I don't know. It's weird what difference the time of daylight makes to your sense of activity. That's not the right word I'm looking for, but it's just during the winter months here in Wisconsin, when it's dark at 4 o'clock, I mean, I'm joking, it's dark at 4:30. Although sometimes I think if it's cloudy day, yeah, around, it seems like 4:15. Once it's dark, it just, I mean, certainly changes your activities. You can't golf, you can't do all kinds of things, but it just, I don't know, it just changes the mindset. It feels like the day is over, even though there's certainly a lot of stuff you could do. I mean, most people still go to bed at the same time. Anyway, so I can't stand standard time. I hate it when it's dark. And again, we've lost enough time as it is, which is just kind of fascinating when you think about it, because here in where I'm at, the eastern edge of the central time zone, the latest that it gets, I think the latest sunset is almost 9 o'clock. I want to say 8:45, almost 9 o'clock. And then with twilight, it's light at 9 o'clock. I mean, I should have had this open, but there's a chart that I've seen and used that shows the hours of twilight, daylight, that whole thing. And then there's different kinds. You know, there's different kinds of twilight. I used to use this last year. Where's this chart? Here it is. So, today, November 6th, and this one is using the location of Madison, this website that I'm using. And so for November 6th, astronomical twilight goes from 5:46 p.m. until 6:20 p.m. Then there's nautical twilight, which is 5:13 p.m. to 5:46 p.m. And then there's civil twilight, which is 4:43 p.m. to 5:13. What they call daylight was 6:38 to 4:43 today. And again, Madison being slightly different, because here where I was at in Waukesha County, I think it was 4:37 was the sunset. But so if the sunset, like just use Madison example, 4:43 was the sunset. And then civil twilight's where it's light enough to see things on the ground. And that takes you to 5:13. But so the longest day of the year is June 21st. Let me get to there. So June 21st, and again, this is using Madison, which is not at the far eastern side. But on June 21st, the sunset is 8:40. Again, that's Madison. So for, I think it might be slightly earlier for Milwaukee. But the civil twilight goes until 9:16. So 9:16, you still got light that you can do stuff, you know, see the ground is lit up. I think nautical twilight, I don't know the exact dictionary definition of that, but that's from 9:16 to 10:02. I think nautical twilight is where I don't want to get this wrong, but there's times when the sky still has light, but not enough light to illuminate anything on the ground, but enough light that you can't see stars. And then the astronomical twilight is where I don't want to get this wrong, but there's the different stages are that some, you know, when you can and can't see stars, because it can be dark on the ground, but the sky is still light enough that it's not lighting up the ground, but you can't see the stars. So that's where all these different twilights come in. But yeah, during the summer, 9:16 is when the sky is no longer light enough. So you can really, like, because you can golf after the sun goes down. You can still see the ball. You can still see things on the ground. There's still enough light from the atmosphere, from the sky, to see things on the ground. Anyway, we don't need to talk about daylight savings all night. But so this time of year, I knew it was going to be dark. So I knew that I'd have plenty of darkness before I'd be done doing whatever I was doing. And so I put the show in on like Tuesday to hopefully get more live listeners. And I don't see anybody in the chat tonight, but that is another way to interact if you're listening live, is to interact with the chat. It'd be great to hear from you. So what do we got tonight? So a couple different things I was going to talk about. Well, first, Tuesday, man, so there is zero doubt in my mind that if it wasn't for fraud, there would just be an astonishing red wave on Tuesday. There is no doubt in my mind, coast to coast, Republican candidates would just slaughter the Democrats if it wasn't for vote fraud. I don't know if any of you have seen the movie 2000 Mules, Dinesh D'Souza's movies, super well documented. Everything he's got there is based upon information gathered from public sources. I mean, the videos that he has of these mules dropping off ballots at 3:30 in the morning, those are videotapes from government sources obtained through open records requests. And then they've got the cell phone data that shows, you know, it's, cell phone data is anonymized. It does not link to a person, but these just geolocation data from cell phones. So they could stratify it to say when, so they know there's an individual person. Every phone has an IMEI number. I think that stands for International Mobile Electronic Identification Number. But every phone has a unique identifying numbers. So that's not tied to you as a person, as a name. You can't buy that data. It certainly exists, but it would take a warrant to get it. So like if the FBI wanted to track down these mules that were stuffing ballot boxes in all the swing states, they could do it. They just obviously don't want to. The FBI is too busy trying to prosecute Republicans and parents at school board meetings and all this other stuff. But, you know, watch that movie. One America News has run it several times. You could watch One America News on, actually, I have to subscribe to get One America News. So I know One America News used to be on many cable channels, but they've been getting, you know, blacklisted off those from the cancel culture. So I'm not sure how you can see it. I mean, I don't know if they put it on YouTube or Google or something, but if you get a chance to watch 2000 Mules, just crazy eye-opening stuff. It makes you realize that when it comes to elections, I mean, we're a third world country. We used to make fun. We're a banana republic. We used to make fun of countries that had this kind of election rigging going on. And yet here we are in the United States of America, and it's exactly what's happening here. And so it's funny because the left is sitting here. There's times when the left, through like they say, oh, 55% of the candidates that are up for office this year are election deniers. And I think, you know, you just gave them the biggest endorsement you could possibly give them. You know, because the media thinks that it's a negative, that everybody's like, oh, if you're, you know, if you question the results of the election in 2020, you're not fit for office. That's the message the media is trying to create. But I think most people, including a lot of Democrats, because they've had polling that shows a lot of Democrats, suspect that there was malfeasance, vote fraud, you know, doubt about the true outcome of the 2020 election. So when the media goes on trying to chastise someone for being an election denier, I think they're actually giving them an endorsement, because there's a lot of people who, and here's the thing, if I was a Democrat, I would want to know that elections were honest too, because I believe that's the reason that large metropolitan cities, which are almost all run by Democrats, don't get better. Like it's awesome. Like why the hell wouldn't, you know, there was the guy that did the Kia Boys documentary, and he interviewed people talking about these Kia Boys stealing cars, and the people, this is in the inner city, not going out to the suburbs and talking to, you know, white folks, but he was talking to people in the inner city. A gas station, they're like, you know, you should throw those MRFers in jail, and you should, you know, throw the people that live in the city. And again, that's not a scientific sampling, but it was just the people that live in the city, they don't support this soft on crime bullshit. So you think, why wouldn't John Chisholm get challenged? You know, the DA's an elected position. Why wouldn't, you know, in the past, whether it was Tom Barrett or whoever, it's truly my belief that in Milwaukee and urban cities that the politicians are selected. They're selected by a internal cabal of powerful liberals, powerful Democrats, whether it's, you know, in between labor unions. And, you know, these are the people that these community organizing folks. I mean, there's a covert network of Democrat activists who I think, it's just my suspicion, I wouldn't bet my life on it, but I think that even in the Democrat races, those are driven by fraudulent voting. Because I just don't believe that the people in the inner city wouldn't vote for a change. The people in the inner city are sick of the crime, sick of sick of the reckless driving, sick of all kinds of things. And they just, again, I just don't believe that they wouldn't vote for a change, but yet the same kind of people keep getting same kind of judges, same kind of, it's my belief that in the inner city, whether it's a mayor's race or whether it's a municipal judge, whether it's the DA, even in the Democrat primary, I think that there is vote fraud in the Democrat primaries to make sure that the person that the power elite of the Democrat Party wants to get elected gets elected, not a a Democrat who's going to maybe go a different direction, be tough on crime. That's just, again, my suspicion. And so if I was a Democrat, I would want to make sure there was honest elections, because even for the Democrat candidates that you want, I mean, again, there's primaries. But it just, to me, it doesn't, I don't buy it that organically it would keep getting reelected by such wide margins when the city is going to shit. And Tom Barrett's wasn't black, so there's no, you didn't get the whole like black vote thing. So between all the activist groups, that the labor unions, these community organizers, these nonprofit groups, I think they can drive enough of the voting results to affect, and I believe that they do, even the Democrat elections, even the Democrat primaries. Because again, I just, and probably even the generals too, and I'm not talking, forget the statewide races, even the county and city races. Cause I don't believe that the majority of people maybe enough people don't vote, but enough people do. When I say do vote, enough votes are cast to keep electing these Democrats. So, Tuesday is like my Super Bowl. I'm concerned here in Wisconsin. I think if there's no vote fraud, Tim Michaels wins by 10 to 15 points. But the margin of fraud, I think, is good for a good at least 5 percentage points. and probably more. I would say the margin of fraud is somewhere between 5 and 15% of the vote. If you could truly flush out all the vote fraud, which comes in a variety of forms, which comes from this last 2020 election, the illegal voting in nursing homes, they didn't have the special voting deputies. And so they were having nursing home administrators essentially voting for people who had no idea who they even were. I mean, these people with dementia and other things. And so you take that, I think that's an organized thing. And that's the thing about the Democrat Party, is they're so organized and so committed. The Democrat Party is loyal and motivated. Loyal to party and motivated. Republicans are loyal to principle, and I shouldn't say not very motivated, not very activist. Democrats are loyal to party and committed activists. Republicans are loyal to principle and not activists, most of them. And so it's amazing that Republicans even do as well as we do and end up winning some races because of what we're up against, between the media, between the organization that Democrats have, and again, the vote fraud that Democrats have, which comes in all these forms. It comes in the illegal. We know there was illegal voting in the nursing homes. That's been documented. How much? I think it's a whole bunch. It's been proven in, I forget if it was 30 or whatever cases down in one nursing home in Racine. But, you take the nursing home statewide, and I think you're talking thousands and thousands of votes. So vote fraud came from there. Vote fraud comes from, we know that there are absentee ballots sent out, like Janelle Branchon just got 3 sent to her, military absentee ballots. Absentee ballots went from like 1,600 on average a year in Wisconsin a few years ago, and now there was like 8,000. And that's not just military people all of a sudden getting more engaged in voting. That's a huge amount of vote fraud in there. I'm sure of it. Then you've got the drop boxes, the vote, you know, all the, I mean, you've got the people who, there's 150,000 people on the voting rolls in Wisconsin that they were trying to purge off the voting rolls, but the between the Wisconsin Election Commission and lawsuits and appeals and other, they haven't taken those off the voting rolls. And so those are, again, 150,000. I mean, in the last election, what, Trump lost by 20,000. And they've got 150,000 people on the voting rolls that those they think that those voting registrations should be canceled out, whether people that are dead or whatever. And it's almost certain that a huge number of those voted, those 150,000, because the clerks know who – And Zuckerberg, with his Zuckerbucks, was in the clerk's offices, and they have access to all that data. So all the different sources of vote fraud, I think for sure 5% and probably as high as 15% vote fraud. And that's my suspicion. So, yeah, fingers crossed for Tuesday. But what's happened in Wisconsin? Like, what have they done other than knowing? And see, Democrats are always one step ahead. So other than knowing how the vote fraud took place, what have we done? What have, you know, and again, I get it. Tony Evers can veto anything they put up there. But I there's been things that I think Republicans could do as well, and they haven't done between the Wisconsin Election Commission, because Robin Voss appoints members to that. I think there's more that Republicans could have done and haven't. And didn't. So, I mean, I don't think anything legislatively has changed since the last election. I don't think that there's any way or reason that the same vote fraud that took place in 2020 isn't going to take place in 2022 here. I think that, so yeah, it's that's why for me, Tuesday is such a, I would feel so good. I'd be so excited if something had changed. If, I mean, remember many years ago during the Walker administration when they passed voter ID. I mean, we thought, okay, here we got voter ID. Now we're going to have honest elections. I mean, Democrats are always one step ahead of the process. New ways to cheat, new ways to, you know, they're always one step ahead. So, after the Democrats pulled off such a great cheating operation in 2020, why wouldn't they do it again? I mean, no one got fired or, I mean, it just, And it doesn't make sense to me. And here's the other reason that, you know, Democrats, first off, they, at the federal level, they have to hang on to power because if Republicans gain control, there's going to be investigations. This shit's going to get exposed. At the state level, Democrats have to maintain control. Like, for example, in Wisconsin for the governor, because if we get a new governor, there's going to be voting reform. That's why some people were like, oh, you know, why does George Soros or whoever care so much about the Wisconsin governor's race? You'd think they'd care more because right now a lot of money is going. Mandela Barnes is not getting all kinds of money from donors outside the state, but Tony Evers is getting a whole bunch of money for voters outside the state. From donors outside the state. And people would say, well, you know, why would you would think that these out-of-state donors being not living in Wisconsin would be more interested in trying to help Mandela Barnes in the Senate race. And for two reasons, one, because the Senate race doesn't appear to be very close or too close here in Wisconsin, might be outside the margin of fraud. And the governor's race appears to be very close by polling, which we know is bullshit. But the reason that I think that Democrats are funding the governor's race is because they need to keep election reform from happening in Wisconsin. Because if election reform happens, then in future elections, it's going to be difficult to get Democrats elected to national offices. So, yes, Democrats out of Wisconsin have more interest in national politics than Wisconsin politics, except for the fact that with Tony Evers as governor, he vetoes any election reform that Republicans have passed and sent to his desk this past year. And so now the Republicans could get close to a veto-proof majority. I think in, I forget if it's the Senate, they only need one seat in Wisconsin, or the House, the Assembly, they only need one seat, and the other one they need like four or five or something, but it's really close. And those are not statewide races. Those are races where perhaps, you know, the county clerks that administer those in the non-Milwaukee, Madison, non-Milwaukee, non-Dane County areas, maybe those are honest enough elections to where some of those blue counties that aren't Milwaukee and Madison flip red, and Republicans like Janesville, I think in the Janesville area, there's some Democrat assembly people. I know outstate, I think in La Crosse area, I think up in the, I think in the northwestern part of the state, like Duluth, Hayward. I think there's also Democrat assembly people from that part of the state. I'm not sure if there's any Democrat assembly people. There's got to be a few Democrat assembly people from the Fox Valley. But those are places where Republicans could pick up a veto-proof majority, and then you'd see election reform pass as well. Got a couple people popping in the chat tonight. Eben popped in, and Lon popped in as well. Lon, Eben, great to have you guys with. I don't know if you guys were popping in because you thought the show started at 8:30, but yeah, we've got about a half hour in here. If for those of you just joining the chat here, if you don't want to hear me talk about daylight savings time, then ignore, don't go back and listen to the podcast, because I think I went on and on about daylight savings and that whole bit for the first half hour of the show before we started talking about Tuesday and the elections. So fingers crossed. I'm hoping for a good result on Tuesday. Tuesday nights, like for me, it's a Super Bowl. It's must-watch TV, and that's what I'm going to be sitting watching the returns come in and praying for the country, because, man, we'll know on Tuesday. On Tuesday, we'll know if – because without vote fraud, I mean, it'd be a massive red wave. And so when we look at some of these races, we'll know. If there's no way without vote fraud, Tony Evers wins. There's just no way. So if Tony Evers wins, we know that the vote fraud game is still strong here in Wisconsin, and that doesn't spell good news for some people say, oh, yeah, the Senate's really going to hinge on Pennsylvania and Dr. Oz if he can win. And Pennsylvania is one of the most corrupt states for voting in the country. That makes me real nervous that we're you know, the balance of power in the Senate could rest in hoping for free and fair elections in Pennsylvania. Can you believe that? That Fetterman guy, I mean, the debate performance, the guy can barely even form a coherent, well, he can't even form a coherent sentence. And, you know, the fact that he's not, again, and I think polls are all junk, but the fact that he's not like polling at like 25%, tells you that Democrats are, again, extremely loyal to party and extremely motivated activists. Just a quick comment here, Dubek versus Call. So two good things, a good thing and a bad thing that happened this week. I was contacted by a guy, and this was just reassuring, and he wanted to stay anonymous, so I can't give you, you know, can't share his name, of course, and can't share too many details, but this gentleman had a disorderly conduct citation. I want to say he's got to be around like 29, 30. He had a disorderly conduct citation from years ago when I think he was 18. Yep. He told me he was 18. He had a disorderly conduct citation, and there was a domestic abuse modifier attached to the disorderly conduct citation. So because of Wisconsin Carry versus, because of Dubek versus Call, the case that Wisconsin Carry funded through the Supreme Court of Wisconsin last spring, and won, disorderly conduct can never be triggered the Lautenberg Amendment. The Lautenberg Amendment is a federal amendment that says if you're convicted of a misdemeanor crime of domestic violence, you can't own or possess a gun. But for years in Wisconsin, they were interpreting, at least especially under Josh Call, they were interpreting any disorderly conduct citation that included any element. They were going back, if you had a disorderly conduct, they were going back and looking at disorderly conduct citations and looking at police reports, because there was disorderly conduct citations where there wasn't even a domestic abuse modifier attached to it. But reading the police report, it appeared that you could classify it as a domestic incident. And then they were revoking concealed carry licenses. And that was the case with Mr. Dubik. So Wisconsin Carry sued, and our attorney has told us that, look, that because this, the way the statute, the Lautenberg Amendment, it, the case law defines what constitutes a misdemeanor crime of domestic violence. And in Wisconsin, because disorderly conduct, you can be convicted of disorderly conduct and never touch a person. Disorderly conduct can never meet the standard of the Lautenberg Amendment. So in Wisconsin, to state it plainly, disorderly conduct can never be disqualifying. In, if you're convicted of battery with a domestic abuse modifier, that would be disqualifying, because battery is a misdemeanor crime of domestic violence. Battery with a domestic abuse modifier is a misdemeanor crime of domestic violence. And battery does meet the standards established. You can't batter someone without touching them. And that's one of the elements that has to be there for misdemeanor crime of domestic violence. It has to involve unwanted touching. Shouting doesn't do it. If you shout at someone in a domestic argument, that doesn't count. Has to be unwanted touching. And so that thing, disorderly conduct is such a, the standard is so low, you don't have to even touch someone. Disorderly conduct, you can get disorderly conduct for swearing at someone. So even if your disorderly conduct has a domestic abuse modifier attached to it, you cannot be prohibited under the Lautenberg Amendment. So in the case of Josh Dubik, he never touched his wife. They got in an argument. She locked him out of the house. He shouldered his, you know, broke back into the house by sticking his shoulder into the door to get through a locked door to get back into his house. But in the police report, it says, and I don't know if it was in the police report, the police asked her or if it was in part of the testimony, but she said she was never afraid. She was never afraid. She was never, because I think a threat of violence can count. You don't actually have to beat someone, but if you are standing over them and say, I'm going to kill, you know, I'm going to, I think that in certain circumstances that might be disqualifying, but not under disorderly conduct statute in Wisconsin. So Dubik won his case on a number of points, but essentially because the way the law was written, even if Josh Dubik had actually hit his wife, which he didn't, it's not Josh Dubik, I forgot his first name, Daniel, I guess Daniel Dubik, even if Dubik had physically attacked his wife, because he was only convicted of disorderly conduct, that's not disqualifying under the Lautenberg Amendment, because the disorderly conduct statute is so, the bar is so low. So note to prosecutors, if someone beats up their wife, generally you would charge that as battery anyway, battery with a domestic abuse modifier. And that's, disorderly conduct is usually charged when there wasn't physical violence. But I know of one case where a guy slapped his stepson. So that was, you know, physical violence. He slapped his stepson and boom, got this convicted of disorderly conduct and then no gun rights. Obviously, again, that's another one that's addressed by our victory in the Dubik case. But this individual who I was, who contacted me this week said, hey, here's a situation. When I was 18, I was convicted of disorderly conduct with a domestic abuse modifier. For that reason, I've never been able to buy or purchase a gun or own a gun. But I'm curious if now, because of these, the case last year, if I could, and I looked at his record and I said, yeah, you should be able to pass a background check. So he goes out and he buys a gun and boom, I think he was 18 at the time. I think he's 29 or 30 now. And he was so happy. He's like, you know, he's thank you so much to Wisconsin Carry and for all you guys have done. This is a great day for him, for his family. He can protect his family now. And it was a heartwarming thing to hear. And then I just asked him because I said, you know, I'm just kind of curious. And again, this, you know, it doesn't change the reality here, but I'm curious about the facts of your case because so many times people think, oh, Wisconsin Carry is getting wife abusers the ability to carry a gun and possess, you know, and it's really not. The people that we've been helping are people that never touch their wives. Now, again, he could have hit his girlfriend, but because he only got charged with, see, that's the thing. If you actually hit your girlfriend, hit your wife, they're probably not going to charge you with disorderly conduct. They're probably going to charge you with battery, with a domestic abuse modifier. And that would disqualify you under the Lautenberg Amendment. So I asked him, I said, and again, I can't use his name or anything because he wants to stay anonymous, but I said, hey, what happened in your situation? He said, I was living with my girlfriend. We had a kid together. We got in an argument. Nasty things were said by both of us. The police were called. I never hit her. She never hit me. When the police came, I didn't want to let him in the house. I told him, if you want to come in the house, you got to get a warrant. They came in anyway and threw him down on the floor and arrested him and charged him with disorderly conduct with a domestic abuse modifier. Never touched his girlfriend. So those are the people that we've, you know, when you know, the histrionics from people on the news after this case was won last year. Oh, this is Wisconsin Carry is getting domestic abusers, putting guns in the hands of domestic abusers. No, we're not. We're putting guns back in the hands of people who never abused their wives, girlfriends, whoever. So that was a real touching thing to hear this week. This guy, I mean, just, and it's great that it makes you feel good. And you guys, all the Wisconsin Carry members, if you've sent in $10 or you've been a member, you've been a newspaper, you contributed to that. The joy that guy was experiencing this week by being able to protect himself and his family, that you made that possible. And so take comfort in that, that you're actually helping people. Now, coincidentally, another person we reached out to this week, or who reached out to me, it wasn't this week, it was a couple weeks ago, he has been getting denied purchases. He was convicted of, I think, disorderly conduct, but then he was, the charges he had been charged with, I believe it was felony battery, but that charge was dropped. I might be getting the facts just slightly wrong, but I do know that the disqualifying charge was dropped. So he was never convicted of the disqualifying charge, and Josh Call's DOJ is still denying him the right to purchase. And I've looked, our attorneys have looked at his record, and there's nothing in his record that we believe should disqualify him from being able to purchase a gun, but yet there goes Josh Call denying. So even though we have helped some people, there's still cases that we've been taking and are going to have to take to continue to get Josh Call's DOJ to follow the precedent set by Case from the Wisconsin Supreme Court. Next thing I was going to talk about tonight was, another instance. I've used this characterization for years. I've always said that Milwaukee is the place where criminals are treated like victims and the law-abiding are treated like criminals. And the streets are used as a jail, leaving innocent people as collateral damage in failed social justice policies of the Democrats. So I don't know if you guys saw this in the news this past week. There's a young dude. He's probably 18 to 25. He steals a bike in this particular neighborhood. The neighbor who witnesses him stealing a bike stops him with the bike that he was stealing to prevent him getting away. So this was captured on video. The guy, we'll call him the neighbor. The neighbor's standing behind the dude that stole the bike. Again, this young dude, like 18 to 25, he's standing behind him, kind of straddling the rear wheel of the motorcycle, straddling the rear wheel of the bicycle. And he didn't have the kid by the collar. He didn't have him by the shirt. He's just standing there, and then he's calling the police. And then at one point he reaches out and he cups his hand around the kid's neck. Doesn't squeeze, doesn't grab, doesn't whatever, but he kind of cups his hand around the kid's neck as if like, don't try to run away, I've got you collared. Another guy sees him detaining this bike thief, starts running video of it. Say, hey man, get your hand off his neck, you know, so sends that video. At some point, the video gets to the Milwaukee TV stations and all hell breaks loose. Now, again, the neighbor didn't choke the kid. He cupped his hand, excuse me, around the neck of the kid for 3 to 5 seconds. I mean, it was a very short period of time. Didn't choke him, didn't squeeze, wasn't. I saw this past week, the neighbor has been charged with disorderly conduct. So he's in court, charged with disorderly conduct. I don't know what he pled or what. The mother of this bike thief, she's in court. And of course, I think it was Channel 4, sticks the TV camera in her face. And she's just bawling, oh, my baby, he can't sleep at night. He's having bad dreams. And I'm just like, you've got to be kidding me. So a young adult steals a bike. A neighbor tries to stop him from getting away. Doesn't even use force. You could say uses the threat of force. I mean, cups his hand around the front of the kid's neck, doesn't squeeze, doesn't grab, for literally, I think it was 3 to 5 seconds. He's charged with disorderly conduct. Do you ask yourself, it's no wonder criminals feel so empowered in Milwaukee. Because I don't think the kid was, this 18, 25-year-old was charged with stealing the bike. So steal a bike, a guy tries to stop you, he gets charged with a crime, and you're walking off scot-free. Can you imagine how enabling that is for these young punk thugs to just do it again, to keep doing it? I mean, it just, it boggles my mind. Like, I literally can't believe, even in Milwaukee, that's what we've deteriorated to. And I forgot, the young dude who stole the bike, he was black. I don't know if I mentioned that earlier. If the kid's white, I believe this never gets sent to the news, but I didn't see anything in the news that the kid who stole the bike was charged with anything. Perhaps he was. I can't say for certain. I wouldn't bet my life that he wasn't, but I'm 90% certain that the kid that stole the bike, the 18 to 25 year old that stole the bike, didn't get charged with that. And the only person was the neighbor who was trying to be a good Samaritan, trying to help out, prevent his neighbor's bike from getting stolen. And that's where we are in Milwaukee. And again, it's no wonder. I mean, just the message that sends to criminals. Criminals have all the power, all the leverage, and the law-abiding, shut up and mind your own business. And if someone wants to steal your shit, you better just let them. I mean, that's the message. And you wonder why crime spikes out of control in Milwaukee and it's just worse and worse and worse. And people say, oh, well, Nick, you can't throw them all in jail. You don't have to throw every criminal in jail. You don't have to throw every person in jail. You just start throwing them in jail and you will deter other crimes. If you start throwing kids in jail, oh, we don't want to ruin their lives. By not throwing them in jail, you're ruining how many other people's lives? Because if you would just start coming down on some of these car thieves, the Kia boys, you would deter others. If bad things happen after you steal a car, like you go to jail, there's still other kids, some kids that would do it. You're not going to stop car thieves, but some kids would be like, man, that ain't worth it. I mean, it's totally worth it if all it's going to happen is you're going to get a slap on the wrist, you're going to get a court date, you're going to go to court, and then your public defender is going to speak on your behalf, and then the judge is going to give you a little tongue lashing, and then you're back out in your neighborhood with a record. But who cares about your record? You're going to have a record at some point anyway, living in the inner city. These kids figure, you know, it's a big whoop. What difference does it make if you have a record? Makes no difference to them. And so then other kids say, hey, so-and-so, he went and stole the car. He got caught and nothing happened. He, you know, never was gone from the neighborhood. Never, you know, he was, and whether you know him personally or just know of him and you see nothing happen. I mean, then when you start thinking, oh, you know, getting those thoughts about committing a crime and stealing a car, the little good angel on your shoulder says, dude, or I shouldn't even say good angel, the selfish part of it that says, oh, I don't want to end up in jail. That voice disappears because you know you're not going to end up in jail because you saw other kids in the neighborhood do it and they didn't end up in jail. And you know you're not going to get any different treatment. So the risk isn't, if I steal this car, I might go to jail. The risk is if I steal this car, I might get a record. And in some cases, these kids already have records. So it's like, if I steal a car, I'm going to have something else on my record. But so what? So what if you have something else on your record? They don't care. So again, you have to start giving them punishments that they care about. And if you start giving them punishments that they care about, you don't have to throw you're not going to have to throw however many, if there's, right now, if there's 2,000 kids in the inner city stealing cars, you're not going to have to throw 2,000 kids in jail. You throw a few dozen in jail, and all of a sudden the others are like, oh man, they ain't messing around no more. So also we've got here, speaking of crime in Milwaukee and reckless driving, there's a Milwaukee TV station, Channel 4, that's got this public service announcement running where they're asking citizens for solutions to reckless driving. They're calling it Project Drive Safe, and it's been a little spit running on Channel 4. And they're like, oh, you know, there's curb bump outs. So curb bump outs essentially are like where they bump the curb out into the road at certain points of an intersection to prevent people from driving on the shoulders. Because that's some of what takes place with this reckless driving, is kids driving on the shoulders, driving around cars, passing cars on the right, passing in the parking lane. And so if there's just yellow lines in the parking lane for parking spots, obviously you can pass cars on the right. But if there's curb bump outs so that it's not just the yellow lines to denote the parking spots, but there's a spot where the curb bumps out, well, then you can't fly down the, you know, well, you can, but you're going to have some major suspension damage, which I don't think these kids care about because it's not their cars anyway, but it might end your joyride by breaking a tie rod or flattening a tire, or hitting these curb bump outs. So, but this is the solution. I mean, not any discussion about punishments, clamping down on it, curb bump outs. And oh, another one was red light cameras. Red light cameras was another solution to the reckless driving. And then they ask for citizens' input, like what input from citizens, how do we prevent reckless driving? I mean, it's like the solution is right in front of your face and they won't do it. Then they start looking for these lame, ineffective measures to try to prevent something that has a very easy solution, and that's punishment. They talk about traffic cones and signage. It's just total joke. I mean, punish car thieves. But that's where we are in Milwaukee. It feels like bizarre world to me that we've got kids stealing bikes and the guy that tries to be the Good Samaritan, he gets arrested, charged with disorderly conduct. You've got reckless drivers all across the city. And instead of trying to clamp down on the reckless drivers themselves, they're trying to come up with frivolous measures. Use red light cameras as an example. How are red light cameras going to stop reckless driving? It's already illegal to steal a car. Most of these reckless drivers, they're stolen cars. So if, let me get this straight. So if you're willing to steal a car, you're going to be deterred from reckless driving. You're not going to run a red light because there's a camera there. It's going to capture it and mail a ticket to you. The only thing that red light cameras catch are the otherwise law-abiding person who's, you're going to catch the mom who was running late for work and tried to make a light, and all of a sudden the light changes and boom. Well, they're revenue generators, red light cameras. That's what they are. But this notion that red light cameras are going to cut down on reckless driving, like who's dumb enough to believe that? But yet here we have what you would think would be rational people. And again, people in news media tend not to be rational, but I mean, these news anchors, they're all college educated people that sit there and like, do they even think about this crap? How is a red light camera? The only people, first off, thugs and thieves, they don't pay fines nor drive their own cars. So even if a thug was driving his own car, which he wouldn't, when they're driving recklessly, they're typically driving a stolen car. But I mean, perhaps some of these, maybe it is their own car. They're not going to pay the fine. They're probably driving without a license, or they're suspended, which that's not going to get you thrown in jail. I mean, we don't want to put people in jail for nonviolent offenses. So you can have no driver's license, or you have your driver's license suspended because you haven't paid previous fines for who knows what. I mean, you can ticket people for, so if you're going to ticket someone for a red light camera, you can just as easily ticket them for reckless driving. Again, it's that's not stopping it. And it wouldn't stop it. There's nothing about that stuff because they're not paying the fines. So the only people that are going to be affected is the otherwise law-abiding people, like the mom who's going to work in her own vehicle, who doesn't have a suspended, who actually has a driver's license, wants to keep it. And she, you know, runs a yellow that turns red, because as soon as that light turns red, boom, those cameras start taking pictures. And then she gets a ticket mailed to her, and she's going to pay it because she doesn't want to get her license suspended. That's all you're going to catch is the person who's going to pay the fine for a red light camera is not the person who's going to be reckless driving. It's just not. So it's just madness. And I can't believe that. I mean, and I know Democrats are stupid, and I know that, you know, they, but just the fact that they're putting energy and effort and resources into something so stupid as this Project Drive Safe, when the solutions are just right out, just unwilling to consider something that would actually work. It's same thing with like Joe Biden. You would think Joe Biden, these liberals are so committed to their agenda. You would think Joe Biden would be like, you know what, we genuinely need to drill for oil. We genuinely need to expand domestic production like we had under Trump to get these oil prices down. But no, they are so committed to their liberal agenda that they, even things that would benefit them, they won't do. Because if gas prices came way, way down, Joe Biden would benefit from that. If Joe Biden said, man, this, you know, we were hoping to really push off fossil fuel production, but now that, and we were kind of getting away with it until the war with Ukraine, I mean, prices had gone up, but they hadn't you know, they've gone up slowly and steadily since we took office. But then when it, people really noticed it was when the war with Ukraine came, and then all of a sudden they jumped because gas had gone up already like $1 a gallon under Biden over time, gradually over his first year of his term or whatever. And then all of a sudden with Ukraine, they jumped like in the course of a week, you know, another dollar or whatever it was. So, I mean, you would think Biden would be like, okay, you know, we were really, if it wasn't, I mean, the war with Ukraine really accelerated and made people notice and just made this gas price thing an issue. We really got to ramp up the, because he would benefit. He brings gas prices down, and there's things he could do. He brings gas prices down, and he's going to get the credit for it. And that would help him, help other Democrats. They won't do it. Democrats won't even do things that could benefit them because they are so committed to their liberal agenda. It's just amazing. Kind of running short on time here tonight. I was going to talk about back in January, I did an episode and I talked about non-lethal self-defense options, air guns, which come in a couple different varieties. And one of them was the Byrna. That was, I think, January 9th. You can still find it in the archives, but I'm going to revisit it because I got an email from a listener who was interested in a conversation about those. So I'll talk about that maybe next week. I'll get to that again, the Byrna pepperball gun. Because the last thing I was going to come up with tonight or talk about tonight was over the past week, couple weeks, you know, I don't know if you heard, but last week, like Paul Ryan was in the news again, just making comments, bashing Trump, blaming Donald Trump for Republicans losing the presidency in 2020 and losing the House and losing the Senate. And it just like... I knew Paul Ryan was a rhino years ago, even when, you know, all the people in Wisconsin were just so busy kissing his butt, especially the people, I mean, people down in Racine. Like there was a lady who works for the Racine County GOP. She's an activist. I probably shouldn't say her by name, but she would always post on her Facebook. She's at Paul Ryan's investiture when he was made Speaker of the House, and she posts pictures from there. I mean, she's very much an insider, post pictures sitting with Paul Ryan's wife, who turns out is a big lib, Paul Ryan's wife. But yet there's some people who just, they love, like, this is my opinion, like some people that they're never going to be successful in their own right. They're never going to be successful in business to where they, you know, have a big company. They're never going to be successful financially. They're never going to be successful as like some celebrity, public figure, media figure, nothing. There's the only way they're going to get close to anything of any person, anything of power is to attach themselves to a political candidate and be a sycophant, a cheerleader, a loyalist. And that's how I would classify this person, that just, you know, that they glom on to politicians because politicians love those kind of people. And many people won't just be, especially conservatives, there's not a lot of people who are that desiring of being close to people in power. But there's a small number. Remember what I said earlier? I said Democrats are loyal to party and insanely committed, insane activists. Republicans are loyal to principle, not party, not people. Loyal to principle and not big activists. So there's not a lot of – in the Democrat Party, there's all kinds of – you just – if you were a Democrat politician, there are so many people willing to suck up, be loyal, be minions, whatever. In the Republican Party, there's not as many people willing to be that kind of person because it's just not in our nature to be someone's little, I don't even know how the right way to characterize it is, but someone's little minion, someone's little worshiper. Like, generally speaking, conservatives don't like worship politicians. But there's some that do, and that's what, so Paul Ryan, like, there was these people who just, like, oh, Paul Ryan could do no wrong. Oh, Paul Ryan, he's the great, oh, Paul Ryan. I always thought, even going back to 2016, Paul Ryan was the first person to kick Donald Trump to the curb. Disinvited Trump from a rally out in the Walworth County Fairgrounds that was supposed to take place. Went and told the whole caucus, hey, you know, you guys, if you need to distance yourself from Trump for your reelection, you know, go at it. You know, there's going to be no repercussions from leadership in the House of Representatives if you need to distance yourself from Trump. I mean, Paul Ryan threw Donald Trump under the bus as quick as he possibly could back in 2016 after the Billy Bush tape came out. And there's been other things. Paul Ryan, just back when Paul Ryan wouldn't use, when the Republicans controlled the House, I think it was for Obama's second term, and Paul Ryan just, we sat there, it's like, why won't Paul Ryan use the power of the purse strings to limit Obama's agenda? And he just wouldn't do it. But I think Paul Ryan's now been exposed as the rhino that he is. I think more and more people now finally see it, that Paul Ryan's no, he wasn't the, and I'll be honest, like when Paul Ryan back in 2012, when it was Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan, I thought that would be a great ticket. And I was even still, I remember Paul Ryan, I was voted, I think Paul Ryan was the first person I ever, not first person I voted for, but in the first election I ever voted, Paul Ryan was on the ballot running for, I think it was at the time, the first congressional district. I was living in Delavan. I just turned 18. I was a freshman in college. And yeah, I think Paul Ryan, I think he was running for office. And I think he was the first person that I ever, he was not the first person I voted for. He was on the ballot the first time I ever voted. And I'm trying to think. So I turned, so November of 2018, did I vote when I first, because I would have turned 18 November 1st of 1992. And I think that's when Bill Clinton was elected. I was going to DePaul. I don't think I've, maybe I voted absentee. I don't think I did. I don't think I voted until, I don't think I voted in the 1992 presidential election. That was the first presidential election I could vote in because I turned 18 November 1st. I think the next fall, '93 was the first election I voted for. Voted. That was the first election that I voted. And then maybe it was 94. Anyway, I'm lost going down memory lane there. But so I used to generally kind of like Paul Ryan, but it just became obvious to me, especially Obama's second term, that Paul Ryan was just he was a rhino. That's why I always called him Paul Rhino. When Paul Ryan was challenged by, I forget the guy's name. He was from Delavan. I don't think it's going to come to me, but I had the guy on my show. I had the guy on Well-Armed Radio just because I knew he wasn't going to defeat Paul Ryan, but I think it would have been a nice shot across the bow of Paul Ryan if, you know, like instead of winning 60-40 in the primary, or no, in the primary, Paul Ryan would have won like 90-10. But if Paul Ryan only won his primary by like 60-40, that might have been a wake-up call to Paul Ryan, like, oh, people are noticing that I'm not the conservative that I purport myself to be. Gosh, I can't remember that guy's name. I could, if I Googled it, I could, but I know it's kind of boring when someone sits on the computer here and Googles and talks. The name's not going to come to me. I'd have to Google it. But yeah, so, and it was, I remember it because I remember Dan O'Donnell on WISN was filling in for Vicki McKenna at the time. And after the primary, when Paul Ryan still wins big, he spikes the football and then, oh yeah, see Paul Ryan. But that, and I was like, you know, Dan, you're sitting here spiking the football in a Republican primary. People are very disappointed in Paul Ryan. And the people who are most disappointed are probably your very committed, very informed conservatives. A lot of who probably listen to talk radio because they're that engaged. And you're going to sit here like, look, if you're going to spike the football when Scott Walker defeats Tom Barrett or Mary Burke, great. I mean, you're in a friendly audience for that. But in a Republican primary, you're going to sit there and spike the football after the the primary election where Paul Ryan defeats the challenger. That's spiking it right in your Paul Nealon. Yeah, that's it. I don't know if you had to Google that even, but Paul Nealon. Paul Nealon later turned out to have I forget if it was anti-Semitic comments or something, and he just torpedoed himself. But Randy Bryce was a Democrat, but Paul Nealon was a Republican. Randy Bryce went up against Paul Ryan in the general, but Paul Nealon went up against Paul Ryan in the primary. And that's the one where I was like, I voted for Paul Nealon. Well, no, I don't think I was in his district at the time. I supported Paul Nealon in that primary because not because I thought he would win, because I really thought that Paul Ryan needed a shot across his bow to be more conservative, do more to stop Obama's trouncing of the Constitution. That's it. Yeah. I couldn't remember if it was anti-Semitic or white supremacist or something, but Paul Nealon did come out and make some comments. I don't know if it was after the primary, but he was still like involved with his PAC or something anyway. But that was and I don't know if he is or isn't, but he made some comments there was a lot of people who were so disappointed in Paul Ryan that that's the reason that they were voting for Paul Nealon. I was one of them. And I've known Paul Ryan was a Rhino for a long time, and I think now people finally see it. Which, interestingly enough, so Brian Stile, who replaced Paul Ryan, or, you know, now holds the seat that Paul Ryan once held. Brian Stile worked for Paul Ryan at one time. He's from the same insider group down there. I think they're both from Rock County. If you listen to Brian Stile going, and I've met Brian a couple of times, met him at a couple of events that I spoke at with some of the Grandsons of Liberty events and things. Brian Stile strikes me. So first off, I'm always a little bit suspicious of Brian Stile because he's comes from the Paul Ryan cabal. Brian Stile strikes me. Look, he seems like a very nice guy when I met him at events, but I think Republicans are too much suckers for someone with an R behind their name. And I just, for me, Brian Stile, like, I don't think he's proven himself as a very strong conservative in here. Eben says Stile is like a Paul Ryan clone. Yeah, I would agree with that. Go along to get along. And I think that the district might lend itself to that because, you know, you got Janesville. Janesville's got a lot of blue-collar folks in it. Democrats tend to do pretty well. So you really got to toe that line. It's not like, you know, you're a bigger disappointment, Scott Fitzgerald, because Scott Fitzgerald is not from a purple district. But Scott Fitzgerald's another guy that's gone to D.C. and just seems to have loved the D.C. lifestyle. Because have you heard of Scott Fitzgerald doing anything? What has he done to fight for freedom in D.C.? I mean, if you haven't even made a media headline for something, you're not doing shit out there. I mean, obviously you've got on one end, you've got the extremes like Marjorie Taylor Greene's, I don't think he's in it now anymore, but Madison Cawthorn's, you're very, very, very vocal U.S. House reps. I'm not expecting Brian Stile or Scott Fitzgerald to be that, though it would be nice. But Scott Fitzgerald, I mean, he's just go along to get along. I mean, I think he's just, yeah, there's another one, Matt Gaetz from Florida. It's funny because I thought they were going to get Matt Gaetz with Gaetz, Gaetz, why? I can picture him. I thought they were going to get him with that. They were trying to get him with that whole, you know, child sex scandal, like underage. It's funny because when he came out and said, you know, we're just so used to, politicians being shady that when they first came out with those trying to smear Matt Gaetz or Gates. I think it's Gaetz. When they first came out with that, I thought, oh, you know, he'll be resigning soon. But he said it wasn't true. And then they all say it's not true. But yeah, Matt Gaetz, he's another one of those firebrands that says it. I love how Matt Gaetz just says it like it is. But Brian Stile, he's been on Vicky McKenna's show. I mean, this guy is just a talking point machine. Every time he does an interview, Brian Stile, we're going to take the gavel from Nancy Pelosi. That's one of his. We're going to use every tool in the toolkit. Every single interview he uses, he puts that out there. Every tool in the toolkit. And so it just, again, Brian Stile strikes me as that 1990s, 2000s kind of Republican, like your George W. Bush kind of Republican, which is not all that conservative. I just, every time he's done the media circuit, because, you know, the U.S. House, they're up every 2 years. So he's done the obligatory interviews. I mean, Vicky McKenna's had him on. And again, if I was Vicky McKenna, it's not like I'm not going to have him on, or I'm going to, I mean, we want to hold that House seat. We need to hold that House seat. But Brian Stile makes it's like nails on a chalkboard listening to him. That's not even the right character. I just shake my head in disgust/disappointment every time I hear Brian Stile talk, because he's so the typical go along to get along Republican, says what he needs to say, says, has the talking points down to a T, but just not all that conservative. And it's just, he's been all over the talk radio circuit for the past month. So I don't know if anybody else has caught him, but yeah, that's his MO. He's got those talking points and platitudes right down to a science. Excuse me. So that's the show for tonight. Thank you guys for tuning in. Glad we had a couple of you live, Lon and Eben. Lon, it's great to hear from you. I don't think I've caught you for a show for a while, probably because I usually start the shows really late. Sometimes I was doing 9:30. For the show start time, but I was supposed to gotta hit that button, Nick, hit the outro music button and make sure it clicks. So thank you guys for tuning in and for your comments in the chat, and even for always being there with the you're the instant Google, although I know you didn't have to Google, you're like the binder. is that what they call, like, a minder? Someone who reminds, like, someone. Here, Lon says lots of camping this year. I've been doing I'm calling it tramping. The yacht just got put away for the year last week. This last Saturday. The Saturday before was the last day for the yacht. So I bought a inflatable topper for my truck. And we already used it once, went and stayed up, camped at Bighorn State Park, but we're going to be tramping around the state, leaving Friday so that we can get up to some place, then hike Saturday so we can hike some places we haven't been before. So yeah, Lon, your camping season might be coming to an end, mine's just beginning. So, all right, you guys, great to have you with, you podcast listeners, thanks for tuning in. You guys have a great week. Don't forget to vote on Tuesday, of course. That sounds so specious to say. I mean, you're listening to this show. I'm sure you're all out there ready to vote. And so next Sunday, hopefully we've got some good things to talk about. And you guys have a great week. Carry on. Be well armed.
This is Sniper Chick Julie. You've been listening to Well Armed Radio, and I have to know, is that a gun in your pants, or did you just really enjoy the show?
Stop listening to the bombastic loudmouths on the radio and television and the internet. To hell with them.